Back when the Super Bowl had just two X's and no I's, V's, or L's, I actually got to go to the game. Super Bowl 20. The team I'd followed from the moment I sprang from the womb was finally going to the Super Bowl that year. And I had to get me a ticket. My wife, though, she'd had quite enough football for one millennium. Still, I was willing to do anything to be at that game. Anything, even if it meant changing my identity and impersonating a car salesman. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Welcome to Hoytus Interruptus. Bear down, Chicago Bears. Make every play clear the way to victory. Bear down, Chicago Bears. Put up a fight with a might so fearlessly. We'll never forget the way you thrilled the nation with your T formation. Who could forget that? Bear down, Chicago Bears, and let them know why you're wearing the crown. You're the pride and joy of Illinois. Chicago Bears, bear down. The person most responsible for my devotion to the Chicago Bears was, of course, my dad. His job, each and every Sunday, was to watch the Bears game on TV and chart every play using a clipboard and yellow legal pad. He'd experience the highest highs and the lowest lows, putting on a show there in the living room that was far more entertaining than the game itself. I wasn't sure if the clipboard was actually for charting plays or for slamming on the footrest in front of him whenever the Bears would screw up. Of course, I'd sit right there next to him, taking in all of this diverse and colorful football-watching behavior. In fact, my mother told me that when I was 3, she saw me one day slamming my hands down on that very same footrest, saying, damn it, son of a bitch! I had no idea what a son of a bitch was, but I was pretty sure that if he ever came over to our house, my dad wasn't gonna be very nice to him. As you might expect, the football programming stuck, and I've been a Bears fan pretty much all my life. No footrest is safe. Best year ever to be a Bears fan? That would be 1985. The Bears had Jim McMahon at quarterback, Walter Payton in the backfield, an ironclad defense, and when it was first and goal from the one, Refrigerator Perry, all 325 pounds of him, would rumble into the end zone with tacklers attached to him like pilot fish on a whale shark. Yes, that year was just about the most fun I could or would ever have as a football fan. Can't say the same for my wife, Cindy. She's not a sports fan in any way, shape, or form. I'm just thankful that we happened to meet right in the middle of some of the darkest days in Chicago Bears history. Not only did they suck, but I had no access to them. I lived in Dallas Cowboys country, far, far away from Chicago, and this was during the pre-Jurassic era. No cable, no ESPN, no internet, no dish satellite. The Bears were just a tiny little box score in the paper every Monday. Plus, hey, I was in love. The Bears were out of sight, out of mind. Now, Cindy knew I was a fan, and I knew she wasn't. It's not that she hated football. That's something she would grow to hate, with my able assistance, of course. Growing up, though, she simply had no interest and didn't pay attention to football. It was just never on her radar. We connected on so many other levels, just not that one. After we'd been married for 7 years, the Bears suddenly came out of hibernation. It was just like those locusts that live in the ground for 21 years and then eat everything they see. That was the 1985 Chicago Bears. Clap your hands. After all those years of sucktitude, clap your hands. The 1985 Bears were unstoppable. Clap your hands. They absolutely destroyed their opponents. Clap your hands. In one stretch of 3 games, they gave up just 3 points. Clap your hands. The players were cocky and entertaining. They were having the times of their lives, and the entire country went along for the ride. Almost every game was on TV. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The Bears? Really? But, of course, I became happily consumed by them. I watched games live and then played them back on videotape. That's something my dad would do, not me. I spent the weeks between games completely distracted by my embarrassment of football fan riches. Watching and reading everything I could get my hands on. Cindy, meanwhile, was living a kind of twisted remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. She woke up each morning with a human statistic machine. I bored her to tears with potential playoff matchups, rambling explanations of the 46 defense. It was getting out of control. I had become what the Bears aspire to become each and every year. I had become a monster of the Midway. The Bears' road to the Super Bowl was really more like a Sunday afternoon cruise. In the playoffs, they destroyed the Giants. Then the next week, they humiliated the Rams to earn a trip to Super Bowl XX in New Orleans. I became obsessed with getting a ticket. And I told myself that this might be really good for Cindy. She could stay home and ignore the Super Bowl in peace while I made my pilgrimage to football fan Mecca. A true fan can rationalize anything. A week before kickoff, opportunity knocked. There was this local guy named Dave who had tickets for the game, but couldn't go because his wife was about to have a baby. Dave sold cars for a local Chevy dealership. He'd won an all-expenses-paid trip to the Super Bowl from Chevrolet's national headquarters. It was a huge national sales incentive contest. Just one winner from each state, and all 50, would fly together on a charter jet to New Orleans, 4 nights at a fine hotel in the French Quarter. All meals, 24-hour open bar, tickets to the game, and chartered bus to and from. I made him an offer, and we had a deal. There was just one very important caveat. I would have to pretend I was Dave, and Cindy would have to pretend to be his wife, Kate. So much for ignoring the Super Bowl in peace. I was asking my playoff-weary wife to adopt a fraudulent identity in order for me to reach football nirvana. Dave said that no one he knew would be on the trip, but that he was toast if Chevrolet found out he'd sold it. He said just wear the name tags, go to the events, and be prepared to speak car at any moment. Not one of my strengths. But I didn't tell Dave that. So, off to New Orleans we went. Just Cindy and me and 49 of the best car salesmen in the country. I was pretty excited. I'd see my Bears play in the Super Bowl. Cindy would get a nice vacation. It was a total win-win. Our game plan was simple. Go to the organized events, keep our mouths shut, stay as briefly as possible, and get the hell out of there. We had a couple of close calls. First night, big party, open bar, our Dave and Kate name tags on our shirts. After Cindy and I finished up a serious helping of Gulf shrimp, we were headed for the door when the incentive winner from Tennessee came sauntering up with his wife. Hey there, Dave! How are things in your neck of the woods? Ah, well, we're just fine. Larry? How many units you sell last quarter? We set records left and right. Well, Larry, the minute I won this trip, I said to myself, Dave, you earned this, buddy. You go down to New Orleans, have the time of your life, and forget all about work. I heard that. Hey, why don't you and the missus join us for breakfast in the morning? Well, actually, Cindy and I were thinking we might... Cindy? Says right there, her name's Kate. Cynthia Kate. I call her Cindy. Oh, I got it. Well, you two get out of here and go have yourselves some fun. So we did. And for the next 3 days, we somehow managed to hang out with our sports shirt-wearing, car-selling brethren without being discovered as frauds. The sit-down dinners made me the most nervous. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. So if anyone asked for my take on the new 86 Camaro, I just get something caught in my throat. Or suddenly need a trip to the restroom. Then, finally... there was a football game. We will. It was a glorious blowout. Bears 46, Patriots 10. While Cindy enjoyed a relaxing stroll through an eerily quiet French Quarter, I watched my team become world champions. When the game ended, I became a little boy again, shrieking and jumping, high-fiving everything that moved. No way I was going back to the French Quarter in the Chevrolet chartered bus. Too slow. Too many car salesmen. I had to emote. I had to be in the streets. My favorite team was on top of the world. I ran all the way back to the French Quarter in a short-sleeved shirt in 45-degree weather. As I raced down the middle of Canal Street, high-fiving Bears fans hanging out of their windows in gridlock traffic, I saw hundreds more up ahead of me, running over the top of a line of stalled taxicabs. I thought, okay, that's where I draw the line. But as I got closer and closer, a kind of herd mentality took over. We became like buffalo running over a cliff. And before I knew it, I'd hopped onto the hood of the first and only car over which I've ever stampeded. There was no second car because, frankly, unbridled joy and wanton property destruction didn't seem like very compatible sensations right at the moment. The sidewalks would be just fine. Besides, I was in more of a jumping up and down and hugging total strangers kind of a mood. So while Cindy relaxed with a good book in our hotel room, I partied deep into the night with my cousin Kent and thousands of deliriously happy Bears fans. Now, I know the Super Bowl is really just part football game, part advertising showcase, and part holy day for the beer industry. But when your team is actually there for the very first time, it's a feeling only a fan can fully comprehend. Yet that year, my wife did her level best to just stand back so I could go to a place I'd never been. So here's to the...